The Initial Reaction Podcast coming at you without my buddy JP Kadoran of Spectrum Sports this week. It's just going to be me flying solo because I got a couple interviews that I want to get to you right away. I've got a big show planned for you for the NFL Draft, one of my favorite times of the year and probably yours as well if you're a Green Bay Packers fan. I've got a chance to catch up with Rob Reichel, who writes for Packers Plus. He talked a lot about the draft. We talked about TJ Watt and how he might fit, Pewaukee native, who's going to be the third Watt brother joining the NFL here on Thursday or Friday if he falls into the second round. It'll be Friday, but a lot of mock drafts think he's going to be a Thursday guy. So we talked about him. We talked about some wild cards, some possibilities for the Packers in terms of mentioned Joe Mixon's name, mentioned my own personal wild card theory of a new quarterback possibly down the line, and Ted Thompson's future, as well as just sort of what the Packers have done in drafts past and Rob's take on that. Also caught up with another guy who you may know very well, Joe Schobert. He is formerly of Waukesha West High School and the University of Wisconsin men's football team, but right now he's a Cleveland Brown. You probably know him. He's an NFL guy. He's about to go into his second year. We read a lot of stories about the draft and guys from the area looking forward to the draft and people looking forward to the draft, but there's another perspective, and that's of an NFL player whose job could be threatened by the new guys getting drafted. So I asked Joe a little bit about that. He's not the best candidate for that because he's going into his second year. His job is a little secure, I would say, compared to maybe a 9 to 10 year veteran. Although there is a new coaching staff in Cleveland, a new defensive coordinator, so there will be some changes for the Browns. And obviously, Cleveland has the number one overall pick in the draft, and they're going to be getting some impact players. Probably an impact defensive player, Myles Garrett of Texas A&M, is considered kind of the favorite to be the number one overall pick, and not the same position as Schobert, who's a linebacker. But there's a chance that the Browns will be getting some new faces, and certainly we'll be getting some new faces on defense, maybe the biggest face in the draft. We're not going to talk any Milwaukee Bucks. They've been a little bit of a downer lately. On Monday, they went down in the series to Toronto 3-2. We talked about them last week and how exciting they were for the town after they had won game one. They obviously put on an incredible show in game three to go up 2-1, but it's been a little rough since then. They did not fare very well on Saturday in Milwaukee in game four, and then even the series of 2-2, and then Toronto took care of business in Toronto, won by 23 points. So that, not a great showing for the Bucks. They're going to have to win on Thursday and then come back to Toronto and steal game seven to advance and face the Cleveland Cavaliers in the second round. Hopefully that can shift gears a little bit. We might talk a little more Bucks on next week's podcast. So for now, we're going to get started with Rob Reichel. Let's talk a little Green Bay Packers NFL draft, and then I'll be back and we'll throw it to Joe Schobert. Here's Rob. My guest is Rob Reichel. You read his stuff in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and online. He's a Packers Plus aficionado. He's a guy we had on last year about this time to talk about the NFL draft as it relates to the Green Bay Packers. And here you are again, Rob. You are one of the few guests who have been on the podcast more than once. Congratulations to you.
Wow, I feel unbelievably honored, and I think I missed last year's Kenny Clark pick too, so it's remarkable you're bringing me back, JR.
I don't know, did anybody have Kenny Clark? I'm sure some people did, but that was...
Bob, major kudos. Bob McGinn had Kenny Clark.
Beautiful.
That was the only place I saw it. I'm sure there was another place or two along the way, but that was the only place I saw it, JR. So,
yeah.
Bob jokes that he gets it right once a decade. He's a lot better than that, so...
Yeah,
but he was dead on last year. That was a heck of a call.
I do think most mock drafters get it right about once a decade, it seems. But so that's Bob McGinn might be a good place to start because he wrote a piece earlier this week about Ted Thompson, sort of talking about maybe some of his misfires. And every time the draft rolls around, Ted Thompson is going to get a lot of criticism. He's going to get a lot of praise. I think maybe the tide has turned on him a little bit more negatively in the past few years because his drafts haven't been quite so spectacular, and especially as it relates to first-round picks. I guess from your perspective, if you hear it all from fans and from journalists and all you know, the whole gamut, where do you think criticism of Ted Thompson's draft approach or draft results is warranted, and where do you feel like Ted Thompson doesn't get the credit he deserves or at least gets unfair criticism?
Well, I do think largely for the most part, JR, he's really good at drafting. You know, the draft and they'll develop philosophy that he kind of employs has worked to a large level. But my belief, And it's the belief of a lot of other people through the league I've talked to through the years, too. And Ron Wolf fully believes this. And the way Ron Wolf worked things in Green Bay, Ron Wolf was also a terrific drafter. But that's not enough, JR. You need to supplement along the way. You need to make a trade here and there. You need to sign. You need to be a lot more active in free agency than a guy like Ted Thompson has ever been. If you remember, JR, for example, back in 95, Green Bay gets to the NFC Championship game, loses to Dallas 38-27. They're crying on the way home. Mike Holmes in on the plane tells the team, that's the last time we're going to lose to Dallas. Next year we're getting over the hump. And that offseason, Ron Wolf goes out. He makes a trade for Eugene Robinson. He signs Desmond Howard, who was the MVP of the 96 Super Bowl, obviously. He signs a journeyman left tackle named Bruce Wilkerson that I'm sure no one in Green Bay had ever heard of. He signs an inside linebacker named Ron Cox from the Chicago Bears that was a fringe player. Just a mid-level guy, probably the 30th or 40th best player at best on your roster. And he signs a wide receiver named Don Beebe who could run, but his production was never off the chart. And in some way, shape, or form, JR, every one of those guys next year helped Green Bay win a Super Bowl. Not an undrafted rookie free agent that, he fouled out of the Citadel. Some guy he picked off the street that was 20, 21, 22 years old that had spent, that it would take the coaches, half a season to get up to speed. Ron Wolf did a terrific job through the years, Jared, of supplementing his roster. He drafted extremely well. He obviously made the great trade for Favre and later the trade for Amon Green, but he did a nice job through the years too of supplementing. I mean, Ron Wolf in 9 years, JR, made roughly 90 trades. I mean, that's an unbelievable number. It was three times more in that time span than any of his counterparts in the National Football League. He almost treated that roster like fantasy football on some level. But that's just the one thing, and I've talked to Ron about that through the years too, and that's his one major criticism, a problem with Ted, is that's just the one thing Ted has never done a lot of. Ted will draft, he'll sign his own guys, and he'll go back and he'll draft again. And he doesn't fill in the blanks with 27, 28, 29-year-old veterans along the way, JR, who know what they're doing when a training camp starts. A lot of these rookies that Ted Thompson goes out and gets, not just rookies, but undrafted free agent rookies then, too, he'll have a total, JR, 12 to 15 first-year players on the roster, I guarantee you, when September rolls around. And that's just a tough way to go into a season. I mean, if you want to trace the history why Green Bay has perennially been somewhat of a slow-starting team under McCarthy and Capers and this coaching staff, that's a major reason why. They're always one of the 3 to 5 youngest teams in the National Football League. So I know people are getting excited or have gotten excited a little bit this offseason, JR, that, he signed a couple of tight ends and he brought back Devon House and, overall he signed four guys, but he also lost 7 guys. So, I mean, they're minus 3 again in that department in terms of veterans that have departed. So, to me, Ted has done a nice job overall, JR. I give him a B-. He kind of caught lightning in a bottle with that 2010 team that got hot at the right time and played good enough defense to go win a Super Bowl. But to me, JR, if you're not exploring every avenue and every way possible to go and win a Super Bowl, if you're only relying on one of the three elements that, the three options that are presented to you every single year, you're not doing your job as well as you can, and that would be my major criticism of Ted Thompson, JR.
Yeah, you even forgot to mention guys like, or not forgot, but Andre Rison is a midseason right. Pickup. Keith Jackson is in that mix as well, guys who led that 96 Super Bowl. So, and then you talked, like you mentioned, there was more movement this past offseason. You've got, guys like, even Devon House, a lower under the radar move, and then certainly the two tight ends. Do you think that informs anything? Do you think that any conclusions can be drawn then about what's ahead in the draft? Maybe he feels like this class isn't very good and he's going to trade out of the first round, or he's a little more desperate to fill holes because a lot of people have left, but people leave every year. Is he more desperate to fill holes than he has been in years past? Maybe that means he wants to compile more draft picks. Like, do you think that those two strategies can say anything about each other, or is it just a completely independent operation?
No, I do, Jared. I mean, for a team that got to the NFC Championship game, it is borderline remarkable how many holes they have. I mean, they have to almost find a starting guard out of this out of this draft, for example. If he can do that, then the offense is set. But Jared, he's got to get three guys on the defensive side of the ball, I think, to be major contributors in 2017, and that's pretty hard. He's got to get a corner. That's going to be one of his top three corners, I believe. He's got to get an outside linebacker because I think Mike McCarthy, at the end of the day, would love to move Clay Matthews inside. He might even need to get two outside linebackers then if that winds up happening, JR. And I think he's got to get another guy that helps him on that defensive line because I'm not fully convinced Guyon will be back in 2017 when the season begins. He's obviously going to miss the first quarter of the year due to the suspension. So I think that's a really smart guess in terms of what Ted could do Thursday night. Move back, much like he did in 2008 when he went back to pick number 36 and wound up getting Jordy Nelson, which was a terrific pick, obviously. But it is a somewhat deep draft, JR, in terms of where the, you know, when you're picking between about 25 and 45, there's a lot of scouts that believe there's really no difference there between a lot of players. And beauty's obviously in the eye of the beholder. There might be some guys that Ted is in love with that some other teams just don't like quite as much that will be there early to mid second round. So he could certainly move back 6, 8, 10 spots, JR. And I think get himself a quality corner yet. Maybe get himself that guard that he wants at that point in time. And then pick up another pick along the way. He's got 8 picks right now. And I'm thinking if I'm Ted Thompson, this is one of those years where I want to end up with about 10 picks. And bring in enough guys and a lot of guys in the, you know, into training camp, JR, and into the mini camps that, you hope 3 or 4 of those guys wind up sticking and making a real impact, for you in 2017. Because if that doesn't work out, JR, then I think in June, July, then he's got to definitely explore those other options where he brings in a veteran that isn't signed for whatever reason, where he makes a trade, in late August, early September on cut down week. When other teams have a real surplus at a position where Ted is thin at. The rest of that team looks pretty good here. I think they're going to score a lot of points if they can get a guard that plays at a C-plus, a B-minus kind of a level. The defense still is the overall number one concern. They were so god-awful against the pass last year. I think Matt Ryan actually just hit Julio Jones now as I was talking for another touchdown there. There he goes. They were 31st in pass defense. I think they were 26th or 27th in opposing quarterback rating. I mean, every statistic you want to look up, they struggled stopping the pass. And I don't care how good your offense is, JR, you at least have to be serviceable on the defensive side to win a Super Bowl. And right now they're not. I mean, that's one of the 3 to 5 worst secondaries in football. And he's got to find a couple of guys who can come in and give him a real jolt.
And cornerback is certainly a very deep class if you can't find a pass rusher. I think there was a time when we could say, well, you know, the defense, like you said, is in such disrepair. He'll definitely go offense in the draft. It was all about best available player. I think the past few years, maybe that mentality has changed a little bit. It's pretty clear that he's drafting the best available player in need spot. He's gone defense almost exclusively in the last few years and addressing needs that the team has, very specific needs. Is there any chance he goes offense? Like, is it still a case where you have to say that he's enough of a wild card that he could go off the board and take, I don't know, some offensive player, a running back or something, or is it just so clear that he's going to do something on the defensive side of the ball with that first pick?
I would be shocked, JR, if it's offense. I mean, if you look at the last few years, you know, last year PJ Raji retires, you know, or leaves football. I guess we'll see if he's officially going to ever play again. And he needs a nose, and he goes and gets Kenny Clark. 2 years early, you know, the year before in 2015. He had lost Tremont Williams and Devon Howson for agency. He had to get better at corner. And he goes out and he starts his draft with Randall and Rollins. Mm-hmm. He desperately needed a safety in 2014. If you remember, that was the year where Green Bay safeties didn't have a single interception. First time that had happened in Green Bay in like 50 years, I believe. And he goes and he gets Ha Ha Clinton. Mm-hmm. So he has, I think, for the most part, JR, been drafting strictly for need. I mean, fortunately for him, and for the Packers, a lot of these years, their needs are kind of lining up with best player available. So we can kind of still take that approach and tell the fan base, well, I'm taking the highest guy on my board. And he very well might be telling the truth. I mean, it certainly is working that way, or at least reasonably close. And, I think he got himself really good players in Clinton Dix and Clark.
For sure.
Randall, I think he missed on, and, you know, this will be the make or break year clearly for Demaryius Randall. But even right now, JR, you know, there's probably five or six first round cornerbacks, or at least guys of first round grade. And, you know, when Green Bay goes there late round one, you know, at pick number 29, there should be a potential starting cornerback still sitting there on the board. Same thing at guard. I mean, the highest rated guard, but the Lamp kid, you know, that's coming out, JR, he's a guy that's paid for late first round too. Forrest Lamp from Western Kentucky. He's a guy that could easily step in and start. That to me, JR, would probably be the only route he takes, where he might go get an offensive player.
Sure.
He can get a running back in the fourth, fifth round. He loves taking wide receivers. He probably takes a wide receiver somewhere, but he can do that later in the draft. You know, but the rest of that offense, JR, I think is really set. My guess is that, let's just say hypothetically, he stays with those eight picks. He almost certainly has to use six, I would say, on defense. But I think a really good bet, JR, would be he's going to turn those eight picks into the better part of 10, and then maybe it winds up being, let's just say, seven defensive players, three offensive players, something to that effect. But I would certainly think in round one, a corner, an outside linebacker like T.J. Watt from the University of Wisconsin and Pewaukee would be a good guess. He can get himself some help on that defensive line. It really doesn't even matter what position, JR. I think if I were him, I'd start at corner, outside linebacker. But at the end of the day, he's got to get a guy that's going to come and play 70% of the snaps and make a difference.
Right. So T.J. Watt's a good transition. I want to throw a few names at you and see if it's just too crazy or not. Here's T.J. Watt has been linked to the Packers in a lot of mock drafts, and it's going to be a little bit like last year, I think, where Miles Jack was on the board and we waited and waited and hoped that the Ted would make that leap and go get that guy. Different circumstances this year. I think people fell in love with Miles Jack because it was, you know, perceived that he was so gifted, and just an injury, you know, possibility kept him falling. T.J. Watt being the Wisconsin guy, people are going to love to see that connection happen. I could just see us getting to that pick. Everybody's clamoring for T.J. Watt, and then Ted Thompson goes with somebody that, you know, is projected by most people as a second-round pick. I can just see that happening. Does T.J. Watt make as much sense to you as it seems to for all the other mock drafters out there who've got these two guys linked?
It completely does, and as you were so eloquently setting this transition up, J.R., it reminded me of the Sam Deckard of Milwaukee type
yes.
of deal a couple of years ago in the NBA draft where they're I think the Bucks were sitting there at 17, and Decker still was on the board, and they went with Vaughn, mm-hmm. and the next pick then Decker went to Houston, and I think every University of Wisconsin fan in the country and certainly in the state were going bongos that Decker somehow got out of town. I'll be honest, I think T.J. Watt is Ted Thompson's kind of player. I really do, JR, that if he is sitting there and let's just say six corners are already gone and outside linebacker has the most talent and the most depth remaining, where the cornerback group, for example, has been picked over a little bit, JR, I think he goes with Watt. I really do. I did a thing in Packer Plus a couple weeks ago where I broke down the comparisons between him and Matthews, when he took Clay Matthews, remember, back in 2009, and how Clay tested at the combine versus CJ. And I'll just give you a few numbers real quick. You know, Matthews was better in the bench press, JR, 23-21, so it's really close. And he beat him by 2/100ths of a second in the 40-yard dash time.
Geez.
So those are almost identical.
Right.
But now you go to the three-cone drill. CJ wins that one by over a tenth of a second, JR, 6.79 to 6.90. CJ wins in the 20-yard shuttle. I won't bore you with all the numbers, but he beats him there. He beats him in the vertical jump by 2 inches, and he beats him by 7 inches in the broad jump, JR. So, I mean, really, you're just talking is pure athleticism, testing skills, and we know he has the bloodlines, much like Clay did.
Right.
You know, but TJ wins four out of these six categories. We know his Wonderlic is off the chart. The kid's unbelievably bright. I think he was 29 or 30 on the Wonderlic test. I mean, he's got huge hands, JR. His hands are like 11. Clay's were like 9.5. Which is huge for getting off offensive linemen.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the biggest thing there would just be, you know, we know he's been beat up a little bit at Wisconsin with the various injuries that he's had. My belief is he's gotten a clean medical everywhere he's gone. But my God, does he ever fit a need? Clay could shift inside, play some outside if you need him to in passing situations, but shift inside on early down. I mean, I've talked to some people, JR, who fully believe P.J. Watt will come in and do pretty quickly just what Clay Matthews did. It's a real natural, I think, and I think a real fair comparison, too, to compare those two guys in terms of, you know, even Clay, if you think back, JR, was just kind of a one-year wonder, a one-hit wonder at USC, and then he exploded, much like T.J. T.J. just didn't get the chance until later in his career
with Wisconsin
to go play outside linebacker. But a lot of these scouts wholeheartedly and fully believe, you know, that once T.J. gets some time at that position, he's only going to get better and better. I talked to a scout who said, you know, this guy is so smart, it's almost like he knows the play, you know, before it begins, that he sees the alignment, he sees who's going where, and he reads these things. You remember that interception he had for a touchdown against Purdue? It was almost like he was in Purdue's huddle last year.
So I
think he's a Ted Thompson guy through and through, and I think he's on the board at 29. Green Bay takes him. It wouldn't shock me at the end of the day, JR, if Ted Thompson traded up for T.J. Watt like he did a few years back for Clay.
Yeah, I said I tweeted at the time that he made that Purdue interception. That is the highlight they're going to show at the NFL draft when he gets taken, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to be right on that one. I guess I'll have to find out Thursday or Friday if he slips out of the first
round.
That was
an all-time Badger play in Wisconsin history, wasn't it? That was an unbelievable football play that not many guys can make.
Right.
And that's what separates him. He's just special. He's a difference maker. You know, not just the sacks, but the turnover plays. He's going to go and get the ball back for you. He's terrific bloodlines. We know that. He's going to be a sensational locker room guy. I think he'd be a perfect pick for Green Bay, JR.
So here are a couple crazier theories that I still could never see a scenario where either one of these particular guys would get taken in the first round by the Packers. But there's this running back, Joe Mixon, who's got a lot of off-the-field issues, and certainly the Packers need a running back, and it's possible this guy doesn't even make a first-round pick at all because of his off-the-field stuff. But again, a situation where the talent is there and it comes with baggage. I guess more of a referendum on, do you think Ted Thompson would take a risk on a player who has that baggage? I think we've seen over the years that he's not completely averse to doing that, especially if it means getting a late, you know, getting a running back later than you would otherwise.
See, my best guess is the way Ted will handle that, JR, is he's probably got a grade on him, let's just say fourth, fifth round, so whatever number it is, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And there is no way he's going to budge from that hard line. Maybe he's got it higher. Maybe he sees this guy as a perennial Pro Bowler, and he's got a 2 on him or a 3 on him or something like that.
Sure.
And if Mixon slides, then Ted takes the chance. But my guess is the grade Ted's going to have on him, JR, is going to be lower than where Mixon will wind up going. You've seen Ted do that with trades. You know, he had a real chance to get Marshawn Lynch back in 2010. He wouldn't come off that fourth round pick to Buffalo. Lynch ended up going to Seattle for a third. He had a similar situation with Tony Gonzalez. He had a similar situation in 2007 with Randy Moss, where he really draws that hard line in the sand, JR, and he doesn't ever budge from it. There's not a whole lot of negotiating and back and forth when it comes to Ted. Ted just kind of says, here's the price, I'll pay it. And if nobody else will pay it, then he winds up probably pulling the trigger and making a trade like he did with Ryan Grant the 1 year for a sixth-round draft pick. But, you know, with Mixon, I just have a feeling someone's going to take him before we get to the point where Ted's grade, you know, whatever that is, a fourth, fifth-round pick, lines up. And Ted says, all right, now the risk, now the off-the-field stuff, now all the nonsense we're going to have to deal with from a public relations standpoint is worth the risk and worth the investment. I mean, you are right. He's gone after some guys that have had some troubled past with Corn Robinson, certainly with Johnny Jolly. He's held on to LaTroy Guyon a lot longer than I think the overwhelming majority of general managers would have. You know, so he, like you said, he's not averse, I think, totally to these guys, but I just have a hunch by the time Ted thinks all the nonsense that's going to go with drafting Joe Mixon, at what point is it worth dealing with that nonsense? By that point in time, Mixon's going to be gone.
I believe Brett Favre was 36 when he drafted Aaron Rodgers, and so we're not there yet with Aaron Rodgers. He's know, about 3 years away from that point. But there's a guy in the draft like Deshaun Watson, who's a tremendous leader, has a ton of game film, is the type of guy who might be available for the Packers in the first round. Again, no, I see no scenario where that happens. But how we've got to be getting close, right, especially as Brett Hundley gets to a point where the Packers are going to have to make a decision with him. We've got to be getting to the point where they're going to start thinking about Aaron Rodgers' successor. I'm guessing that's not this draft, but could it be the next one? I mean, how close do you think we are to that scenario?
Well, Rodgers will turn 34 in December, right? I think he was born in 83.
Yeah.
You're right. We're getting to that point. Odds are it's not going to be Hundley. I think, you know, what they'll try to do is really showcase Hundley this summer and make a move with him probably next offseason. Because the year after he could become an unrestricted free agent.
Right.
Next year will be year three for Hundley. So you keep him one more year as your primary backup. And then sometime around this point in time, a year from now in 2018, is when you go ahead and move Hundley. My best guess, JR, is, you know, you really go and find that next guy probably in 18, 19, somewhere in that range. But, you know, again, Rodgers is in remarkable shape. I mean, he really is. He eats better. He treats his body better than Favre did. Favre did a lot better with that stuff later in his career, JR, and it's one of the reasons he played till 40.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Rodgers has indicated and hinted in the last year or two, you know, he'd love to get into the early 40s. And really, I mean, if that's the case, JR, you know, you're talking another 7, 8, 9 years of the guy. Now the odds say that, you know, that's a stretch. That's pretty unrealistic. I know our last two Super Bowl winning quarterbacks were about 40 with Brady and Manning, but, you know, Manning was done by the time he won that Super Bowl. Brady looks like he could go another 4 or 5 years, and I'm sure Rodgers is using that as the model, really using that as the benchmark of where he wants to go. I really think at the end of the day, the Packers will just really have to have honest negotiations and talks with Rodgers about, you know, long-term and what he feels is realistic. And I've talked to Aaron about this a couple times, JR. You know, I've said, You had a rough experience, you know, when you came in at 21 and Brett really turned a cold shoulder to you for the mm-hmm. most part. How are you going to be with a new guy at some point in time, whenever that point in time is? And you know he's here to eventually take your job. And you know, Rodgers was very candid and said, you know, I have no idea. I hope I'm better than what it was, you know, back in 2005. But I won't know for sure until I'm in that situation.
Right.
It's an uncomfortable situation for anybody when the new guy and the young guy comes to take your job. But, you know, Ted played his hand perfectly, you know, 11, 12 years ago, JR. I don't think he's quite there yet, but that's something we're probably talking about 2 years down the road is they found Aaron Rodgers' successor, kind of much like New England has set up right now with Jimmy Garoppolo.
Right. Yeah, the only thing I could say to that is it definitely caught us all by surprise in 2005, and I just get the feeling whenever it happens, it might catch us by surprise. It might be a little earlier than we think, but I certainly agree with everything you're saying. Like, there's no reason to think that 3 years from now he's still not a super elite quarterback in the NFL. And, you know,
yeah, and the one thing really working in Green Bay's favor, and I think people will see that again this summer, JR, I'm high on Huntley. I really am. I like Huntley a lot.
Yeah.
And I think they're absolutely set, if they choose to, even for 2 years with Huntley. Now, if they want to get a return on the investment and trade him a year from now, and go and get a fourth or a fifth round pick for him, that's certainly something that I think would be smart and a lot of people would go ahead and do. But otherwise, I think they're without question set up with a quality backup for the next two seasons. You know, the injuries that Hundley had last year really kind of derailed his season. And if he can stay healthy and have a big summer, I think, JR, I think people start feeling a lot better about where they are again with the current backup sure. quarterback situation.
All right, so we'll wrap up with this. For a while, there was some discussion about Ted Thompson's successor with Elliott Wolf, and I know there's been a lot of chatter about just the executives that have left, and has that left a dent in the Green Bay Packer player development scheme, and, you know, just how many more years does Ted have? Well, no one seems to be bringing that up again right now, but really, it seems to me the draft is sort of the end of the Ted Thompson calendar year, you know? Like, if there is a time for him to move on, it would be after the draft, after all the preparation he's done pays off, and then before he kicks in a new cycle of draft, you know, scouting and develop, you know, like development stuff. What do you think? Is there any scenario where you could see that coming to pass this year, or is that just totally off the table at this point?
I thought it was a lot more realistic, honestly, JR, during the season, especially when they were 4-6 and struggling, that we were at a point in time where he was maybe going to move on and pass the reins, you know, to an Elliott Wolf or a Brian Gutekunst or somebody in-house, or they'd go out and get a John Schneider or a John Dorsey or whoever it might be. There's certainly plenty of guys from the Ted Thompson, Ron Wolf tree floating around the National Football League that have done a lot of good things. I'm starting to think less and less that it's going to happen in the next couple of years, JR. You know, Ted's 64. He really has nothing in terms of hobbies and family and interests and things to that effect. You know, where you could say, well, he's going to go retire in Florida and play golf all day and go out on his boat and this and that. He doesn't have those things, JR. Like a lot of executives and, you know, a lot of leaders of companies end up having by the time their tenure is done.
Right.
He really doesn't have a lot of that other stuff. You're not going to say he's going to run around with grandkids because he's never been married. He doesn't have kids or grandkids. And football is kind of his life, JR. I mean, he joked last week at the press conference that he held that, you know, I'm in a dark room all the time, and that doesn't make me weird. And he's not weird, JR, but he's certainly different from the standpoint that he doesn't have a lot outside of 1265 Lombardi Avenue. He really doesn't. What's inside that building, you know, breaking down film, putting together a team, putting together a roster, the staff below him, that is kind of his life and his family on a lot of levels. And, I mean, perfectly honest, JR, I have no idea what he's going to do when football goes away, and I'm sure that plays a large part in his thinking is, you know, what am I going to do with 67, 69, 71? And I if he fully believes, JR, that he's still sharp enough, I don't think the Packers are going to sever ties with him at any point in time soon. I think Mark Murphy's happy, even though the fan base isn't. I think Mark Murphy is happy because the dollars keep rising and rising and rising over in Green Bay and at Lambeau Field with everything that's going on. They're competitive every year. They're in the playoffs pretty much every year. They're knocking on the door of Super Bowls. I think the fan base has every reason to be upset, JR, that they've only won one Super Bowl here in the Ted Thompson era when he's had two Hall of Fame quarterbacks and he's been in four NFC championship games and things to that effect. But, you know, his bosses and his, you know, really his direct boss, Mark Murphy, I don't think it's going to sever ties with him at any point in time soon. I don't want to go as far as saying it's a lifetime contract, JR, but I think Ted's got, you know, certainly the next few years if he wants them. And I don't see any signs that indicate that he doesn't want them.
All right, Rob Reichel, you can find all of his stuff at Packers Plus. Well, not all of his stuff. He's everywhere. You can find him pretty much anywhere. But Packers Plus, certainly a fun time to be a Packer fan. Any last things we should be looking for or getting excited about?
No, just this is a very exciting time. I know it gets an unbelievable amount of hype. And by this last week in April, JR, I know people are burned out. They can't wait for Thursday through Saturday to get here. But I mean, if you're a Packer fan, which I'm assuming 99% of the listeners of this podcast are going to be, I mean, this really is almost your, you know, your Christmas and your New Year's rolled into one, because you're going to get 10 players that come through the door in the next few days that wind up on your roster, and guys, you better get to know pretty well. This isn't like a lot of cities where half the draft picks stick. Ted Thompson's draft picks stick, and the fan base knows this. These are guys that are going to be around in September, and the way the Packers put together their roster, you know, they're going to be four, five, six guys that they take over the weekend. They're going to play vital roles, and in determining if you play in the Super Bowl or not next year. So,
right.
Get excited because this is a fun 3 days.
All right, Rob, thanks very much.
All right, JR, always a pleasure.
Thanks to Rob Reichel for talking at length about the Green Bay Packers and the draft. A lot of TJ Watt in there as well. Let's go to a current NFL player. Joe Schobert, he went to Waukesha West High School. He went to the University of Wisconsin, had a great career for the Badgers. Great story, which I promised myself I would not go into. We've talked about it a lot, how he was a guy who was going to be a walk-on at North Dakota. Even into the summer after his senior year, even after he'd graduated at Waukesha West, he was going to be a walk-on at North Dakota. He goes to the Wisconsin Football Coaches Association All-Star Game. He has an incredible showing that week. The coaches there sort of get Brett Bielema's ear. He's the coach of the Badgers at the time and says, you've got to take another look at this kid. He winds up being a walk-on. I actually had Jed Kennedy on the podcast several weeks ago and talked a little bit about that experience, so you can go back and find that as well in our archives. But they end up getting him to Wisconsin. He's a walk-on. He becomes a starter, has a great career, finishes as strong as possible, had an incredible bowl game as a junior against Auburn in an overtime series where he pretty much was a one-man show. But I didn't want to talk too much about that because that's been covered. It's a sort of canonical story in Wisconsin high school sports coverage. Did instead talk about his first year, look back at his first year with the Cleveland Browns, getting to know Joe Thomas, another Wisconsin product, getting to acclimate into the NFL lifestyle, and then looking at the draft and what his expectations are. If he sort of looks at it dubiously, as I think probably a lot of NFL players do, is like, here come the guys that are going to someday take our jobs. Again, Joe Schobert not really in jeopardy as a second-year player, but still thought it'd be interesting to get his take as well. So here's Joe.
My guest is Joe Schobert. You may know him from a number of areas. Waukesha West High School, the University of Wisconsin football team, and of course now he is about to enter his second year with the Cleveland Browns in the NFL, 1 year removed. I believe Sunday is the one-year anniversary of his getting drafted into the NFL. And so, Joe, we do a lot of stories about guys that are looking forward to their chance to get drafted into the NFL. I imagine it's a little different from the player's perspective. Cleveland is the number one overall pick. A lot of people think they'll take Myles Garrett, the defensive end from Texas A&M. But so how do players look at the draft? Like, on the one hand, you're getting new players, and that's cool. But on the other hand, I'm sure everybody's thinking, are they going to draft somebody at my position group? Going to have to get to know new guys? Like, maybe it's a little different for you than somebody who's been there, you know, 10 years, 9 years. But how is the draft? Like, how do you feel about the draft? How do your teammates feel about the draft?
I don't know. I'm not really, like, worried about it, per se. I'm just excited for the new guys to come into the team. We got a young team already. So I think over the next couple of years, we're going to build a very good base and excited to see how, like, my class, this class, come in and work hard. I mean, I can see why, like, you're in a position where, like, you could be threatened by somebody being drafted, but, I mean, the NFL is a production league, so.
Sure.
You, like, it doesn't matter how you got there, who you are, as long as you get there, you produce more than the next guy, you're going to be fine, so you just got to worry about yourself. You can't worry about too much, like, people coming in and stuff like that.
I'm sure that, you know, every team's going to want to get somebody for each position group one way or another anyway, but do you get any sense from coaches in the weeks leading up to this, like, okay, hey, just so you know, we're looking for somebody who might be a linebacker? I mean, again, I know it's different for you because as a second-year player, as a young guy, you're way less threatened than I guess the average NFL player might be, but is there any conversations about what the team is thinking prior to the draft, or is it as big a surprise to you as anybody else?
Yeah, it's the same, I think, for us as anybody else. They don't really say much and kind of keep it all tight-lipped, try to keep it in-house in terms of in the management house. Like, they don't tell us anything. So I think we'll be as surprised as everybody else when the first pick rolls around on Thursday.
So take me back a year to your own draft day. You were the first pick of the third day. I think it was number 99 overall on that Saturday of the 2016 draft. Did you have any sense that night, the previous night, that Cleveland was looking at you? Was it nerve-wracking that you were going into the final day of the draft and you hadn't heard your name? I think it seemed pretty obvious to everybody you were probably going to get drafted that third day one way or another. But just what was that night, that Friday night to Saturday, like? And then the actual hearing of your name first on Saturday, what was that like?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was expecting either end of the third, early fourth round. Overall, with what I've been hearing, so like that Friday night, I was kind of like looking at my phone, checking it all the time, and seeing if anybody called. And when that like came and passed, I was kind of a little disappointed, but I wasn't like didn't have my hopes up too high, so I couldn't be that disappointed. And honestly, like I didn't really think about it much overnight, and then I sat down on the couch right away to start watching the fourth round, and then my phone rang like that next second. So
cool.
I really didn't have a lot of time to think about it. It just happened. So I guess that's probably better. I didn't have to sit and wait and get the nerves up again.
Were you in a situation where you knew there were a few teams that had more interest than others, and did you have a sense Cleveland would be one of the teams that might come knocking?
A little bit, but that's just, they say, like, don't ever, like, before the draft, teams try to throw each other off by the people they talk to and who they seem interested in, so you never really know. I had talked to Cleveland, and I thought they might be interested, but I mean, it wasn't really any more than any other team I'd talked to before the draft. So
it was still a surprise to me, and I'm happy it worked out.
Yeah, now that you've had a season under your belt, is there anything you've learned in one season of NFL that you could, any piece of advice you could give these guys that are about to hear their names called starting on Thursday? I mean, is there anything that might make it easier for them knowing that, you know, a year from now they would know this particular piece of advice?
I mean, I think it's nothing you can really say that would help. It's like the experience of the first year, just being in the culture, and like it's much more of a business than college. The mindset of the whole team and everybody is different than it is in college, and it's still like team bonding. You still get to know your friends and your guys, but the only thing is the next day they might be gone. So
yeah,
it's just a little different. And I mean, you can say stuff, but you have to experience it really, and then you have to be kind of in, like, on a team just to kind of know. And once, like now, I feel a lot more comfortable and confident going into next year because I have expectations and I know like what the process is through training camp, through the season and all that.
Did you have any eye-opening moments your first season that sort of shed light on the business side of things? Or I guess even beyond that, just moments of the season that were sort of turning point. I don't know if turning points is the wrong word, but like the things about the first season that you're really going to remember.
I think, well, like eye-opening moments in terms of like the business side is just when they do the roster cuts in the fall, when they cut it down to 75 and then 53. Yeah, like one day a team's got 90 guys on it, and then that's just 75. And some of those guys might have been your friends, or you might not have talked to any, some of them, but the next day they're gone, and you just kind of keep pushing forward like nothing happened. So there's really, like, no, like, you don't grieve because you're like, people got cut, but there's really, like, no second thoughts to those guys. So it's kind of just, you keep plugging away, and you got to just kind of worry about your own stuff, stay in your own lane in that sense. I mean, when we, I think another moment would have been we played the Green Bay Packers in the preseason at Lambeau. It was kind of like a wow moment. And then I think after that, nothing really surprised me from the whole season because, like, growing up in Wisconsin and watching the Packers for your whole life, those guys are like the idols in your eyes when you're a kid in Wisconsin. So, like, once you played against them and it's like, yeah, there's a bunch of other dudes just like us and my team, it kind of, like, settled everything expectation-wise for the season.
If I look at a Cleveland depth chart, I'm probably going to see your name first at outside linebacker at this point. I know when you were drafted, you were sort of flexible, willing to go to whatever position you could play, outside, inside. Have you developed a preference through the first year that, I mean, is outside definitely where you think you'll be going forward?
Well, like, schematically, we've had new coaches in this year, and we haven't really talked about our scheme at all, but it's going to be more, I think, more of a 4-3. So
yeah.
It's still up in the air. I'm just going to do my best, learn the scheme, learn the positions, and wherever the coaches need me to play, I'll be willing to play. That's kind of like part of the business side of it. If you can make yourself available at more positions and are willing to play more positions, you're likely to stay around for a longer time.
Right. Speaking of linebackers, your alma mater, Wisconsin's got some pretty good ones, and they've sort of been going through, you know, with you included, a pretty good rotation of standouts. And the coach is there, Jim Leonard, now is the defensive coordinator. You mentioned him prior to, or right after you got drafted, to the Cleveland media about having, you know, met with him and talked to him. And of course, Tim Tibisar was huge for you there, and it continues to be. I mean, when you heard Leonard was named defensive coordinator, I actually thought Tibisar was going to be the guy, but obviously both those guys are huge for Wisconsin football. I mean, what did those guys bring to the table? What do you think they'll continue to bring to the table?
Yeah, I just think, especially Coach Tibbs, playing under him for a year, was definitely one of the best position coaches I had in my time at Wisconsin, just the way he communicates to players and gets his point across and emphasizes technique and then actually works with you on it at practice. So everybody, like, it's a good base, solid fundamental of their technique, and then you can just use the athleticism, which we've been lucky to have a lot of guys in the last 5 years who have been extremely athletic linebackers. And he does a great job of getting the fundamentals and technique down and just letting you play. And then, obviously, Coach Leonard's been 10-year NFL veteran.
Yeah.
He's been in Cleveland, and some of the coaches still remember him from what time around here, and people often say he's the smartest guy that they ever coached. So, I mean, it's always great to have a mind like that. And he knows what the offense is going to be trying to do. So I'm excited to see what he's going to be doing as defense coordinator.
So Wisconsin's got two guys that could go in the first round. I know Ryan Ramczyk was a redshirt your senior year, correct? He didn't, this was his, his big year with Wisconsin this past year. So I don't know how much you saw of him. I'm sure you got to know him, and then and of course T.J. Watt on the defense with you. I guess what do you recall of them? And I mean, are you surprised to see that both of those guys were able to elevate their play to the point where they're going to be first round draft picks?
Yeah, I mean, I remember going into Ramczyk every day because he transferred, but he had to take a redshirt year off, and right. He was on the scout team. So, and he was the best offensive lineman we played against all year, and he's in our practice every day. So, I expected him to have a really good year, and I expected TJ to have an extremely good year too, because he's always been a great, great athlete. And then he just got unlucky his first couple of years with those knee injuries, and then once he switched to defense and stopped moving backwards like what he does to block and getting rolled up on, and he had a healthy season, I knew he was going to be a beast. So I'm not surprised to see the position that either of those guys are in. And hopefully when this weekend rolls around, they'll be happy with wherever they go.
Ramczyk is so interesting as a guy, obviously, who started D3 and then winds up at Wisconsin and now is going to wind up in the NFL. And I've promised myself I'm not going to dwell a lot on the sort of canonical story of you actually getting to Wisconsin and being ticketed as a walk-on to North Dakota and having the whole situation change at the All-Star game. But I'm like, do you ever dwell, think about what had happened if you'd gone to North Dakota as a walk-on? Do you imagine there's... you know, that the talent could have risen to the top still, you could still find yourself in the NFL today? I mean, maybe you just make a name for yourself in North Dakota, maybe you transfer. I mean, I don't know, but do you ever think about if you had gone there, do you think you could still be in position to do what you're doing right now?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I always believed in myself going into college, whether it was wherever I was going to end up, because I didn't really know my senior year that, right. Like, my plan was always, like every kid's plan, obviously, is always to go to the NFL, but
yeah.
I believe in myself, and I mean, UND hasn't had a ton of guys go play in the league, but they've had a couple, and they've been, like, there's obviously, if you are good enough and you go there, you still have a chance to make it. And then, I mean, being in the league for a year, the other thing I've seen is just guys who have made 5, 8, 10-year careers of just being hardworking guys who listen to the coaches and do what they ask and execute on special teams on game day and stuff like that. It's just, if you can find yourself a niche or a role, like anything can happen to anybody as long as you work hard and you listen.
You, I'm sure, have gotten to know another famous Wisconsin football player in Joe Thomas, who's working to pad his Hall of Fame resume on the other side of the ball for the Browns. I mean, I know you hadn't met him prior to joining the team. What's it been like getting to know him and watch him up close?
Yeah, I mean, he's a consummate professional, and he's a goofy guy, always cracking jokes and looking to have a good time in the weight room on the field. So, I mean, it's just, like you said, he's an obvious future Hall of Famer, and it's just kind of a unique experience being able to watch him work his craft, like prepare for games and talk to. He's extremely helpful with all the rookies, whether it's offensive or defensive, if he's watching one-on-ones and you're going against him or something. He's an extremely helpful guy, and he points out, like, what he's thinking pre-snap, so that, you know, if he's thinking this pre-snap, like, another tackle in the league is probably going to be thinking the same thing, whether they can execute or not as good as him, is, like, where he separates himself. But he's always one to point out the things that you can work on and the things, like, he's thinking about. You can take your mental and physical game to the next level.
I'm curious just about living in Cleveland and you know, if I Google you, and you're a guy who played in every single game, and this is not just you, it's a lot of NFL players because there's just so many guys on the roster. It's hard to find, like, there aren't a ton of stories that have been written about you, even though you had a really pretty successful rookie season. Do you get noticed out and about? I'm sure there's maybe some super fans, but I got to feel like, you know, not a lot of NFL guys get noticed just because they wear helmets when they play every day, if nothing else. Do you find that you're able to live exactly as you did before, just, you know, just happen to have this job in the meantime?
Yeah, pretty much the same. Like, when I was in Madison, I could go out, and that's a perk of being a linebacker and not 6'2" white guy walking around campus. There's not a lot of people who, even the diehard fans, most of the time they just see you with your helmet on. So
right. Not
a lot of people recognize you. And but yeah, it's been the same here. And like, I like it. I like being able to just go around, go to the grocery store, do everything without having anybody stop you. I mean, the few times it gets brought up, it's like, people double check because they're like, well, what's your occupation if I'm doing something with my rent or trying to pay a bill or something? And they're like, oh, okay, that's cool. That's like pretty much all that ever happens. So it's been pretty low key, pretty under the radar. So that's the way I like it.
You just write down NFL when somebody asks you, what is your occupation? I'm in the NFL. Like, is that it? Or do you write football player?
I usually just write athlete, and then they ask questions about from there if they're curious.
Yeah, I would definitely be curious. That's interesting. I never thought of that. All right, man. Well, I really appreciate it. Good luck in the second season of your career here. Good luck in training camp and everything. And yeah, thanks. We'll have to catch up again soon.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Hope you enjoy the initial reaction podcast. J.R. Radcliffe of Lake Country Publications and Now Newspapers flying solo. We have plenty of content for you to check out online at lakecountrynow.com. You can find my Preps alcove. I go back in time and look at three key moments from T.J. Watt's high school experience at Pewaukee, including a state track and field championship, as well as a couple cool moments from the football field. So you can check that out. We've also got another Preps alcove that should be out by now, looking at, or will be out by Wednesday or Thursday of this week, looking at the Major League Baseball draft prospects from around the area. That includes some Lake Country people. I did a story on Ben Dragani of Catholic Memorial, a pitcher who's probably going to get his name called at some point in the MLB draft, although he's likely headed to the University of Michigan. So you could check out that. Dan Zielinski pinch hit for me, and he does a lot with MLB draft stuff. He's a freelancer that we use a lot. He talked about a lot of guys. There's a lot of guys in the area who will be worth following for this draft and future drafts. Austin Jones at Whitewater, formerly of Wauwatosa West, is another guy who really has seen his stock rise and could be a big name in the upcoming draft. Also, Wisconsin connection to a guy who might be the number one overall pick in the draft this year as well. So check that out at lakecountrynow.com. There's also plenty of good stuff at mycommunitynow.com. Go back a week. You'll find Steve Tietz's story on Zach Showalter, his sort of look back at his great career with the Wisconsin basketball team, his rise to kind of folk legend status after an incredible tournament shot here as a senior in that loss to Florida. So you can find that at mynorthwestnow.com. Hopefully you keep up with us for all the prep sports coverage as we roll through the spring season. We're finally getting some games in. There's finally some stuff to talk about. And I hope you enjoyed initial reaction this week. We will check in with you again next week. Take care.